Every day, children fall victims to abuse, violence, and exploitation, experiencing physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. Some find themselves at the mercy of human traffickers who enslave them into a world of prostitution, domestic servitude, and bonded labor. On Breakout with BD on the BBS radio station 1, hosted by Demi Nelson, illuminates the clandestine world of child abuse and human trafficking, breaking the silence and becoming a voice to the millions of voiceless children in the world today.
Hello, you're welcome to another exciting episode of Breakout with BD. My name remains Bidemi Nelson, and I'm glad to have you on the show with me today. Last week, we looked at a topic tagged The New Face of Pedophilia, and I remember I brought to you the information about a conference that was held on August 17th in Baltimore, Maryland. And I also remember that when we went on break, I said that I wanted to continue with a PowerPoint presentation that this group, Before You Act, had in their website. But sadly, because of time constraints, I was unable to do that last week. So we're going to hit off the show this week with that PowerPoint presentation. And I tell you, it's really, really captivating, except you really have to be careful on, especially when it comes to which side captivates you. You know, which way are you looking at this PowerPoint presentation? And now we have the confessions of some minor attracted persons in this PowerPoint presentation who discovered their attraction to children as early as the time they were children or even adolescents. And they complained about living in isolation. They complained about self-mutilation. They complained about resorting to the use and even the abuse of drugs. And some of them went to the extent of thinking about castration. And then the PowerPoint presentation went ahead to look at the societal response to minor attracted persons or pedophiles. And they say usually the society will say they are reprehensible, they are intolerable, they are predators, they cannot be allowed to live in the society, and all of that. And they mentioned some institutions that they felt were supposed to help these people who were actually stigmatizing them. And they talked about institutions, for instance, the Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers, the American Psychiatric Association, and the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Center. And that's to mention a few of them. And then the PowerPoint went ahead to talk about the treatment that was available for sex offenders. And it talked about the impact of that treatment on some of these sex offenders. It even made instances of how it made a girl suicidal and a boy violent and homicidal as well. And they really, really made a lot of noise about the inefficiency of the available therapy for sex offenders. And even said that treatment consisted of proposed surgical procedures, and that would include basically two steps: neurosurgery and castration. And then he moved on to the statistics of crimes to children. And this was a report made by Fred Berlin of the Johns Hopkins University Sexual Disorder Clinic. And he said non-sexual crimes were estimated to be over 3,000, I guess probably in a year. I don't know what he's relating that statistics to. And he said sex crimes were less than 50. as compared to 3,000 that were non-sexual in nature. So he's saying now that even for sex crimes that involve kidnapping, torture, or murder, he said it's less than 0.1%. I don't know what to think about that statistics, but even though I admit that the figure is really, really less, but it's not insignificant, it's still something. And then it pointed back to the hypocritical society, and he said that people that harm children will comprise of gang leaders, drug dealers, drunken drivers, alcoholic parents, drug addicted parents, or mentally ill people. And then he moved on to the purpose of this PowerPoint presentation. And basically, the reason for that, for the information in this presentation, was to end stigmatization. And he says three things particularly. It says that stigma prevents minor attracted people from getting the help that they need. It says that stigma brings discrimination and abuse. And it says that stigma deprives minor attracted persons of their dignity and interferes with their full participation in the society. And that's that about the PowerPoint presentation tagged Not One. If you visit their website, you would see this presentation. I'm sure you can help yourself to more information in that regard. And child advocates did react to that conference that was held in Baltimore. And some of the things they said was that the law would always follow the impute of psychiatry. And they nursed this fear that the declassification of pedophilia as a mental illness can repeal or cancel child protection statutes. And they pointed out to psychiatry's normalization of homosexuality as precedents, for instance. And they also believe that it would remove or reduce societal view of pedophilia as a crime and get many sex offenders out of prison. And somebody is saying, "Weep not, child." Now, here is my take on this whole matter. After going through the website and taking in as much information as I could, I have this set of opinion and questions. And I hope some of us too, with our questions and opinions, will be able to reach out to this organization or just learn a thing or two about how we can make better informed decisions about the safety of our children. And let me start with the first point I have here. And we would say that minor attracted people have a sexual and emotional attraction for children. Specifically, we're saying these people are actually in love with our children and wouldn't mind to even give them a bouquet of flowers to express their love for them. Now, the sexual and emotional attraction to children is intricately interwoven into one, but sadly, this means a totally different and age-inappropriate thing to the child involved. And it simply means child sexual abuse. Now, let's look at the tolerance for the feelings or the so-called sexual orientation of minor attracted persons. How safe is this to these people themselves, to our children? And how safe is this tolerance to the society? Do minor attracted persons intend to marry these children they are in love with, or what? Another thing I would like to say is that making minor attracted persons who sincerely are seeking for help because of their uneasiness and maybe embarrassment of having these feelings, you eventually make them targets of societal violence, especially those living within the law, those who are yet to act out on their emotional and sexual attraction to children. That's what I mean. And it's for obvious reasons, because for instance, if you look at the incidents of child sexual abuse that arise from these feelings of minor attracted persons and those who have acted out on their feelings and have actually violated a child or children in the process, you know that there's a lot of pain and even vindictiveness of the parents and the children who have suffered trauma as a result of this. So fine, minor attracted persons need to get help, but they can also get help without making noise. Or when I say making noise, I mean without asking people to tolerate or look at their behaviors in a positive light. That is what I think is a wrong approach to it all. And then what about increasing the crime and even suicidal tendencies of minor attracted persons who are finding it tougher by the day to live within the law? How easy is it to live within the law? What about the presentation of opportunity alone with a child, all by themselves? What would they do? A penny for your thoughts. Let me put it that way. And then another thing I'd like to say is, this organization called Before You Act, they say that they have an obligation to report illegal behaviors or plans for such behaviors to the authorities. Now, should we assume that the showing of romantic gestures to children without plans to have sex with them is a legal behavior? Or should we say the grooming process of children is okay? Or should we be completely hypocritical and just say we are okay with the therapist's obligation to only report maybe romantic gestures to children with the ulterior motive of having sex with them, or maybe to report things like showing off maybe a minor attracted person or a pedophile, as the case may be, maybe showing off his genitalia to a child, or maybe watching pornography with that child? Should we just be complacent and just wait for these things to happen and for it to be reported before we begin to make the right decisions as to the safety of our children? I am sure you have your respective answers wherever you are. Now, we also look at we'll look at this instance of many minor attracted persons who actually hate the emotional and sexual feelings that they have towards children and really want to get rid of it, you know, just overhaul all of these feelings into oblivion. But this group is advocating that they, as a matter of opinion, maybe would not cure them of these feelings, or is probably exposing the failure of psychiatry in curing them. And they are indoctrinating minor attracted persons into accepting this sexual and emotional attraction to children as a form of sexual orientation, rather than a form of sexual and emotional disorientation, which is really, really harmful to everyone and should be gotten rid of. And the organization says further that they help minor attracted persons deal with issues unrelated to their sexuality. Issues like depression, anxiety, issues like hate and contempt found throughout the society, issues like seeking assistance on how they can have a developed, how they can lead a developed and fulfilling lives and relationships within the law, you know. I beg to disagree here, because many of the issues minor attracted persons are dealing with today and will deal with in the future is because of their sexual and emotional attraction to children. And I believe if they can take care of that feeling, they will definitely take care of every other issue that they are dealing with. I believe that cures, C-U-R-E-S, do not definitely end with medicine, therapy, or psychiatry. There's still hope somewhere. You know, I believe there's cure somewhere if it doesn't end with psychiatry and all of that. Now, have we thought about how the tolerance of this sexual and emotional attraction to children can actually help the society unwittingly groom sex offenders who are not really minor attracted persons, but we groom them and we help them in their planning, in their perpetuating, and the actualization of the sexual exploitation of our children, who they just see as instruments of immediate sexual gratification. Some of these sexual offenders who are not minor attracted persons, their numbers might even be more than people who are sexually and emotionally attracted to children. And all that the sex offender needs to say is he or she is a minor attracted person. And sadly, there is no scientific method to prove otherwise. Have we also thought about indoctrinating and grooming children and teenagers who are suffering from things like poor self-esteem, bullying, the aftermath of parental separation or divorce, child sexual abuse, and other things like that? And these kids need emotional support, and they need some love, they need to be shown affection, and they're not getting it. Don't you think that our tolerance of sexual and emotional attraction to children can indoctrinate these children and teenagers who have suffered from negative issues in life into believing, you know, that they can get this love and affection and emotional support from younger children, and therefore be safely classed as having this form of sexual orientation? What about making our children even more endangered than in the past? I tell you, the tolerance, the sympathy, and acceptance of this new sexual orientation will only have a negative implication on our children's safety. Sadly, minor attracted persons still hide as a result of stigmatization. They are not so easy to identify, and many of them work closely to our children in schools, at home, in churches, and so on. And lastly, I would like to say this. Have we ever looked at ourselves, and I'm talking from a societal perspective now, how about us actually ending this thing called societal hypocrisy? We keep blaming the sex offenders for violating our children while we hardly ever blame ourselves. Are the sex offenders or pedophiles also responsible for our constant unavailability when our children need us the most? Are they responsible for our time-consuming jobs, careers, our time-consuming social lives? Are they responsible for our sheer irresponsibility of not paying attention to our children or paying attention to the people that mingle with our children? Are sexual predators also responsible for our mediocre parenting skills that simply oozes out child neglect and lacks affection and communication with our children, especially when it comes to giving them age-appropriate sex education and listening to our children? as sex offenders also responsible for our skyrocketing divorce and separation rates that expose our children to people who are unrelated to them and probably may abuse them? Are they also responsible for our celebration, tolerance, and outright acceptance of the unhealthy sexualization of children? You'll be amazed to know that girls especially appear to be learning from us as parents and the society as a whole to prioritize male attention over academic accomplishments. Clothing stores sell thongs for 7 to 10 year olds, some with slogans like wink wink or eye candy. In child beauty pageants, girls as young as 5 wear fake teeth, makeup, and hair extensions and are encouraged to flirt with the audience by baiting their fake eyelashes and eyelash-laden eyes. And the 2005 Victoria's Secret fashion show on primetime television featured models made up to resemble young girls dressed in sexy lingerie. Magazines, television, and the internet abound with images portraying girls and women as sexualized objects. There is growing evidence that this sex-saturated culture harms healthy psychological development among our children, whether they are boys or girls. Now, let's look at the last thing I'd like to say in this regard. Are sexual predators also responsible for our inability to plan our families, for people that just keep having much more children than they can cater for? I'm sure you had me chuckle as I was talking about the sexualization of children. And I tell you, it's a very pathetic sight. You need to see things for yourselves. And you also need to see the fate of children whose families can't take care of them and who are left they are left on the street to beg to survive. And the street, I tell you, is no place for a child. I'll be right back after this break. Don't go anywhere. You're welcome back from that break. I know that we will not be home and dry if I don't give you certain information which is directly related to what we have been talking about since last week. And basically what I am saying is, today we'll be looking at child sexual abuse. What is it all about? So with that, I believe you can make better decisions as to safeguarding and protecting your children from sexual predators. Now, let's start with the definition of child sexual abuse, and it is the involvement of a child in any sexual activity that he or she does not fully comprehend and is unable to give informed consent to. It's also any sexual activity a child is not developmentally prepared for and cannot give consent. Now, this is a form of abuse in which an adult, a teenager, or an older child uses a child for sexual stimulation to satisfy a sexual lust or a sexual need. And there are two categories of child sexual abuse. You have the physical touch or the physical contact, and you also have the non-physical contact or the non-touch. And as we all know, when we hear about child sexual abuse, we usually would assume that it's physical. But let me start with the non-physical part that would most likely leave you dumbfounded. Now, the non-physical contact, as the name depicts, does not involve touching. This is what makes child sexual abuse a silent and hidden epidemic. And it includes things like seeing an adult forcing a child to expose his or her private body parts, that's one, or an adult exposing his or her body parts to a child. And that reminds me of a particular talk show I love so much. It's a show that airs in the United States, and it's called The Doctors. And I remember on one of the editions of that show, they had this societal survey on whether it was okay for people to walk around the house, to just walk around the house butt naked. And so, in fact, I think almost everyone who was interviewed on the street confessed that they loved to walk butt naked in the house. Guys, please, if you are going to walk butt naked in the house, please make sure your kids are not there. It's offensive to a child to see. Please, I beg you. Now, another thing is what you call the peeping Tom. And this peeping Tom is an adult or an older child or a teenager who loves to peep, usually through a keyhole or a door that is left ajar, at children to look at their nakedness, to feed on their nakedness without the knowledge and consent of the children or child involved. That's another form of child sexual abuse. And what about another one that would really, really, really shock you? And that is exposing a child to sexual materials such as magazines, watching X-rated films, looking at pornographic pictures, sometimes on websites. These are all forms of child sexual abuse because you are exposing your child to adult material that child has not been, he's not ready or developed to comprehend and process or digest. Now, another thing is when an adult or an older adolescent flashes his or her genitalia at a child. I was talking about someone walking butt naked. Now, that might be unintentional, but when you see someone who actually shows off his private parts, maybe his or her breast or penis at a child, you know, once or twice, and he does it over and over and over again, you know, it's embarrassing to the child. Now, all of these things are the non-physical contact, and they all still constitute what we call child sexual abuse. Now let's go to the physical contact, and with that is also very severe, and we are looking at touching or fondling of a child's genitalia such as his buttocks, his or her buttocks, laps, or the vagina or penis. And it also would include forcing a child to touch or fondle an adult's genitalia. It also includes fingering a child's vagina, penis, or anus with the intention of getting a sexual satisfaction. It might also involve rape or forcefully having sexual intercourse with a child. And sometimes it would involve, in fact, most times it involves oral sex, vaginal or oral intercourse, and this might involve actual penetration. And we know how very painful that can be for a child. So that's the much I'll be able to say about child sexual abuse. Those are the things that would make up sexual abuse when we are looking at how you can actually, you know, perpetuate this thing to our children. Now, one thing I would like us to have grasp on as well today is the profile of a pedophile. I hope you understood what I just said. We want to look at the profile of a pedophile. And a wonderful woman did a beautiful work on this. Her name is Lynn Burris. And she did a wonderful work on this. And she started by saying that parents often imagine a child molester being an ugly old man dressed in a trench coat, hiding behind bushes in the dark of night, just waiting for the right moment to kidnap or molest a child. But she says child molesters come from all walks of life, and please do not discriminate when it comes to child sexual offenders, probably based on race, gender, social class, or age. Anyone can abuse a child. And she said you should look at things like an adult male, but some women who also sexually abuse children. So she's saying the profile of a pedophile would start with him being an adult, a male or a female, who loves to sexually violate children. And another thing is he could also often molest children, you know, themselves. And he also might have been a victim, a child molestation victim themselves. They also would seek out children of the age group they were when they were victimized. So I hope you are getting the flow now. They are adults, male or female. They were victims of molestation as when they were children, and would seek out children of the age group that they were when they were victimized. They might be usually married and hardworking. They might be employed within a wide range of occupations. They are usually well-liked and respected community members. They are often well-educated and regular churchgoers. They relate better with children than adults. Some prefer boys, some prefer girls. Usually prefers a specific age group of children. Takes and collects photographs of victims while dressed or nude or in sexual poses. They might also collect child adult pornography. They might seek to lower inhibitions of potential victims, and this has been seen quite regularly. We've seen a lot of child molesters who lure their victims, their child victims, with things like alcohol, so that child will not be able to resist a sexual onslaught towards them later. And then other profiles might include that pedophile regularly attending children's events in the community. He might also volunteer in youth organizations. He might coach children's sports at schools or at summer camps. He might chaperone camping or overnight trips. He or she might frequent video arcades, playgrounds, or shopping malls. They often would offer to babysit for you. They would seek jobs where children are easily accessible. They would be friends with parents, especially single mothers, to gain access to their children. They would participate in internet gaming with children. They would join social networking websites such as MySpace, Facebook, or other social media. They would even go a step further and become foster parents. And they might seek job opportunities where children are easily accessible. And these are some of the things that Lynn talked about. And if you listen carefully, you will see that there's a lot to know about child molesters and pedophiles. So we can't afford to just be complacent or do things like we used to do in the past. We need to be more alert. We need to be very, very much alert so as to ensure that our children are not violated. I'll join you again after this break. I'll be right back. You're welcome back. My last work for today's show is informing us on how we can protect our children from sexual predators. And I love the information I got from the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, popularly called RAIN, RAIN. And it talks about ways that parents can be actively involved in the lives of their children to prevent and help their children come out of an abusive situation, if there was any in the first place. And it said that some of the things that parents can do is to talk to their children about sexuality and sexual abuse in age-appropriate terms. And you have to remember this. Everything has to be done in age-appropriate terms. And it gave us, they are giving us some tidbits on how to go about this. And it started by saying that parents should talk more openly and directly about sexuality, and teaching their children that it is okay to talk to them when they have questions. So parents, you need to let your children know. You need to teach your children that it's okay that you are accessible, that you are available to answer their questions about sexuality and other sex-related issues. Then you need to teach your children the names of their body parts so that they have the language to ask questions and express concerns about those body parts. So please stop calling the penis Jack Robinson or something. I think it's totally gross, and I just think it's wrong. You call the body part the name of the body part, and that's how it should be done. And then the next thing is, teach children that some parts of their body are private. Let children know that other people should not be touching or looking at their private parts unless they need to touch them to provide care. So maybe if they've used the if they've gone to use the toilet and they need to be cleaned up, that's a good reason for somebody to touch their private parts. But if not, no child should allow anyone to touch his or her private part. And if someone does need to touch them in those private areas, a parent or a trusted caregiver should do so. Now, you also need to tell your children that if someone tries to touch those private areas or wants to look at them, or if someone tries to show the child their own private parts, they should tell a trusted adult as soon as possible. All children should be told that it's okay to say no to touches that make them uncomfortable, or if someone is touching them in ways that make them uncomfortable, and that they should tell a trusted adult as soon as possible. And this, they also say that this can lead to some slightly embarrassing situations, such as a child who says they don't want to give a relative a hug or a kiss. It's true. You need to work with your child to find ways to greet people that don't involve uncomfortable kinds of touch. You should also talk more openly about sexuality and sexual abuse. And you should teach your children that these things don't need to be a big fat secret. Abusers will sometimes tell a child that the abuse is a secret. Let your child know that if someone is touching them or talking to them in ways that make them uncomfortable, that should never stay a secret. Make sure to tell your child that, or your children, that they would not get into trouble if they tell you this kind of secret. Basically, they are telling you to build a very strong trust and bond between you and your child. And they also say this: do not try to put all this information into one big huge talk about sex. Talking about sexuality and sexual abuse should be a routine conversation. And they talked about another thing here. They say that parents should be involved in their children's lives. And how can you do this? First, you must be interested in your child's activities. Ask your child about the people they go to school with or play with. If your child is involved in sports, go to games and practices. Get to know other parents and coaches. If your child is involved in after-school activities or daycare, ask them what they did during the day. I think it's your responsibility to know as a parent. What about the media? Parents just let the media teach their children a whole lot of things without them coming into the picture to put the record straight. Now, this organization, RAIN, they are saying that you as a parent, you must talk to your child about the media. If your child watches a lot of television or plays video games or watches or play other games on TV or the internet, you should watch or play it along with them. Many TV shows show sexual violence of different kinds. so you must be alert as a parent. Some video games as well allow the user to engage in sexual violence. So you see why you should be involved in these games with your children. Use examples from TV or games that you have watched or played together to start up conversations about sexuality and sexual abuse. Know the other adults that your child might talk to. That's also very important. Children sometimes feel they cannot talk to their parents. Know the other trusted adults in the life of your child. That's one of, it's a lifesaver. I tell you, if you're a parent and you it's tough for you to build that bond and trust between you and your child, take an extra effort, you know, to know that person who your child is bonding with, who is different from you. You should know this person. It's important and it's a lifesaver. And the last thing they said is, you as a parent must be available for your child. You must make time to spend with your child. You must let your child know that they can come to you if they have questions or if someone is talking to them in a way that makes them feel uncomfortable. You must be sure to follow up on this. If your child comes to you with concerns or questions, make time to talk to them. And they ended it by saying, when you empower your child to say no to unwanted touch and teach them that they can come to you with questions and concerns, you take critical steps in preventing child sexual abuse. And this, I believe, is what every normal thinking parent would want to do. I'll be right back. Welcome back. A particular letter from a concerned mother intrigued me, and I have decided to read that letter out to you today. I found this letter in the MontrealGazette.com, and the letter was addressed to a woman known as Annie. I believe Annie gives counseling to people with certain domestic issues. Now, let me read the letter to you. She says, my son has been married to Josie, I'm sure that's not the real name, for 11 years. I never cared for her. She has a volatile temper and creates destructive scenes. In the past 3 years, Josie's violent behavior has escalated. She used to put holes in the walls and destroy dishes and furniture. Now, she hits my son. If he defends himself, she calls the police and has him arrested. This has become a regular routine. She recently held a loaded gun in his face. I'm scared to death that she's going to kill him. On top of that, Their children are frequent witnesses to this madness. I've pleaded with my son to get her help, because she's mentally sick. Josie says she doesn't need counseling or medication, and my son cannot get her to go. Quite honestly, I don't think he's tried very hard. I know I can't force my son to do anything, but I want to protect my grandchildren. What can I do? And it's from a concerned grandmother. And if you remember what we talked about, this is still going back to what I call societal hypocrisy. This is a case of domestic violence, and the victim is the man, and his mom is worried that the son is not getting help for the wife, and the son doesn't even know that he should be getting help for himself, because he's the victim. He and the kids are the victims in this case. So I would like to use this opportunity to reach out to victims of abuse, spousal abuse. There are hotlines that you can call to get help, to get out of abusive situations. It's not your place to be abused. Abuse has to stop so that our children would enjoy us, so that we can live long enough to watch our children grow, to watch our grandchildren grow up, so that our children will not be indoctrinated into the world of violence. So if you are listening to me today and you are a victim of spousal violence, you need to get out of it. And if you don't know who to call, then call the police. And I'd like to use this opportunity to talk to you about an event that is coming up this Sunday. And it's from my very dear friend, Shai Invidiata, the founder of an organization known as Free Them. The website is www.freethem.ca. And this organization will be doing a 5-kilometer walk, and they want to raise $1,000 so that they can fight against human trafficking in Canada and abroad. Now, if you are not in Canada and would like to participate in this walk, you can do that by donating. If you visit the website, you'll be able to see where you can, the link you can click on to make your donation in this regard. And I am certain that you'll be making a difference where it is most needed. Thank you, Shai, for this wonderful work that you are doing. And I'm moving on to another documentary that I hear that will be shown today. Now, we are going to Topeka, I hope I got the pronunciation right, and that is a place in Kansas. The Topeka Center for Peace and Justice is sponsoring a movie on human trafficking titled Not My Life. Now, this is a documentary about human trafficking and modern day slavery that will be screened this Thursday night in Topeka. Oscar-nominated filmmaker Robert Bilima not only pulls back the curtains of the brothels of Mumbai, India, but also the truck stops of Oklahoma City and finds underage prostitutes in both places. Not My Life bills itself as the first documentary film to depict the horrifying and dangerous practices of human trafficking and modern slavery on a global scale. It depicts the film synopsis that calls this the unspeakable practices of a multi-billion dollar global industry. The narrator of this documentary, his name is Glenn Close. He says that profits from this multi-billion dollar global industry are built on the backs and in the beds of our planet's youth. Now, for more information about the Cancer Center for Peace and Justice, go to this website, topekacpj.org. So if you really want to see the documentary today, and I implore and challenge you to do so, please visit this website for more information as to how you can go about it. And that is so far for our segment, News on Breakout. Now, the last segment of the show, which is Angels on a Mission, I will be talking to you about a man that has so much inspired me. His name is Chris Jones. And Chris Jones was inducted into the Palm Beach County Sports Hall of Fame in March. He's raising his 15-year-old son and is a father figure to 16 boys aged 19 to 17 as a program supervisor at the Children's Place at Home Safe. And this is an agency headquartered in Lake Worth that provides care and treatment to abused, neglected, and abandoned children. Lake Worth is in Florida, for those of you who don't reside in the United States. And Jones has said that seeing youths on his Home Safe team reunited with their parents, who have also made improvements in their lives, is such a great feeling for him. So this is thumbs up to you, Chris Jones, the wonderful, wonderful man who is making a difference. And for those of you who don't know, Chris Jones used to be a former Hurricane Eagle player. And he used to be the University of Miami and the NFL's Philadelphia Eagles player. So thank you, Chris, for the wonderful job you are doing. Now, this is how far that we can go today on Breakout with BD. I want to thank you guys for listening in. I'll catch up with you next week. And until then, remember, it's only your responsibility to make your children safe. It's only you that can start this work. Please, let's do the right thing and make the world abuse and violence free for all our children. I'll see you next week. Bye.